All right, ladies and gentlemen around the Delaware Valley, welcome to the Who's Who in Philly Labor Show. We are sponsored by Robin Lewison and Healthmark Enterprises, and we are also co-produced by Robin Lewison. How are you, Robin?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I was excited about today. I hardly slept last night. I knew we were going to have some big-time guests, and really, it's going to be a phenomenal show. Lots to talk about. Certainly, pain... And pain management is something that is at the forefront of really not just the medical profession, but in the news.
It's really a necessity with what I do.
And you've said many times that
I like using them as gatekeepers.
Because
they can control the whole case. More so than probably a primary care doctor. And NASPAC, North American Spine and Pain, is an amazing group because their doctors are so well trained. They do procedures that a lot of other pain doctors don't do. And we have Dr. Kieran Slevin here today, an old friend of mine.
Not only an old friend, but we're basically from the same hometown in Ireland.
I think we're actually related, Joe, truth be told.
Well, you can kind of tell. Dr. Slevin's from the tall side of the family.
Dr. Slevin is from the tall.
I'm from the sort of stout, sort of thick and short side.
I'm actually known as world's tallest leprechaun.
Really?
Joe is the leprechaun.
Well, here's the thing. I am not. I'm about 5'8". Except a couple Guinnesses in me, and I'm right eye to eye with you, Doc.
I like your style, Joe.
But thank you, Doc. Definitely great to have you back on the broadcast.
And we also have Dr. Leonard Bruno here in the house, renowned neurosurgeon.
And legendary in the Philadelphia region.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody went to Dr. Bruno. Did you know that I worked for Mike Avalone?
Oh, you did?
I did.
I didn't know.
And I mean, all those doctors referred to you.
Yep.
I mean, it was like one-stop shopping. They just sent them all to you, right? And they had a CAT scan in that group. So they did the CAT scan and then sent them right to you.
Yep.
And that's how I met Dr. Bruno and his partner, or his previous partner, Dr. Salkine.
Mm-hmm. And I said this, and I was excited. I didn't. So when you said Dr. Bruno was going to be on, with Dr. Slevin, I thought, okay, it's a Dr. Bruno. I said, my wife said to me, oh, you got to be kidding me, right? And I started thinking about it, and I'm like, nah, I couldn't be. And then I called Robin this morning, and she's like, yes, that's Dr. And then I went right on. I'm like, oh, this is going to be phenomenal because, like I said before, and Doc, your office, and yourself and your former partner, just a legendary neurosurgeons in the city of Philadelphia, in the region. And my wife, and she said, I just dropped her off, and she said, tell the doctor, I said, thank you for saving my life, because it actually happened. I remember we were talking about it before the broadcast, and we got lots to talk about. Robin's going to get through. But I'll never forget thinking to myself, if something doesn't happen here, we will not make it. And guess what? You can see, she's got a little bit of the scar there, but it was a difference between life and death. And so, Doc, we want to thank you for being on the broadcast.
I appreciate that.
And thank you really for all the people whose lives you've impacted and saved over the years.
And still is.
Exactly.
Every day.
I mean, basically,
thanks so much.
You were so well trained. And instead of going to the major teaching hospitals, you went into the
community
suburb
medicine.
And the community where it really was needed. And they got phenomenal doctors without having to go into the city.
Yeah, I think, Gene, my partner, Gene Salkine, was also a spectacular surgeon. And I tell people all the time that he was my family neurosurgeon, He operated on my wife, my son, my daughter. I said, if that's what you need for a recommendation, I think that you might be safe having him operate on you.
Yeah.
So.
And then you operated on the rest of the people.
Well, sort of. Yeah.
But let's be real. Bruno and Salkind. Let me say. You know. I mean, it's been legendary in the city of Philadelphia.
And now, NASPAC, North American Spine and Pain, has Dr. Bruno. Right, Karen?
Yeah, I mean, we're incredibly lucky to have Dr. Bruno on staff, to have somebody with his depth of skills, experience, and, you know, time spent treating patients in the greater Philadelphia and the tri-state region, to sort of bring that skill set and lend, to bring your expertise to NASPAC has been an incredible gift to us, and as well as to our patients, to have, you know, you on staff to be able to, you know, treat these patients that are in need of more advanced care is just wonderful for everybody that walks through our doors.
I'm looking at, okay, you know, I can only imagine what it's like to depose the doc. Ready? Graduated cum laude from Princeton, then received his medical doctorate at Columbia University Medical Center.
Not too shabby.
You might as well just end that one quickly.
Exactly.
Who's your guy? That's what I want to know. Doc, first of all, we thank you for being on the broadcast.
That's my pleasure.
Thank you. Listen, it's an honor. We're talking about, individuals. We talk about pain and, life-changing situations.
Pain is just not a Band-Aid anymore. I mean, you guys can really do procedures now that you couldn't do in the past. And I was telling Kieran last week, I spent 4 days trying to convince an attorney that pain doctors are now doing microdiscectomies.
That's right.
And yeah. He was just like, I don't believe you. I'm like, it took me 4 days. And he's like, really? And I'm like, yeah, they can do it. They have surgery centers. And surgery centers, I mean, who doesn't want to go to a surgery center instead of a hospital now?
Exactly. I mean, patients like the fact that they can go to any NASPAC facility, get seen that day,
yes,
have their visit coordinated with their procedure, get the procedure scheduled either that day or, you know, a subsequent day in the near future without having to go through the headaches of, you know, inpatient admissions, additional testing, you know, long drives, getting seen at other referral centers to get into the hospital.
Right.
We can bypass all of that and still give them the same quality of care and at least as good, if not better, outcomes by treating with us under the same roof at our ASC.
Especially if it's an emergent procedure.
Correct.
Because these people used to wait days, if not weeks, to get seen or to get their procedure done at a hospital, right?
No question. Yeah.
I mean, it's still happening and it's still antiquated and it's crazy.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they would have to go through the emergency room.
Yeah, in order to get admitted.
Yeah. Right. Which, by the way, they still do.
Of course.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
There's no fast track.
Talk about that.
Well, one of the problems really is the intervention, I guess, of the government in forcing the reduction in hospital beds.
Right.
So they decided that one of the ways to decrease hospital costs or medical care costs was to decrease the number of beds. So now all the beds are filled all the time. And patients who need to be admitted have to wait to get into the hospital. So there's a question of, you know, where the emphasis was placed there. I don't think it's overall reduced medical care costs at all, and it's made it more inconvenient.
Well, you know, I know at Penn and Jefferson, they have a holding zone. So it's adjacent to the ED, the emergency department, and then they keep you there overnight instead of admitting you.
Those are the 23-hour beds.
That's crazy.
So, yeah.
And I don't understand. And I bet you dimes to dollars, it costs just the same amount of money.
Of course.
It's just it's more uncomfortable and inconvenient for the patient. It still just doesn't work.
You know, it's all about access to care and getting in to get your condition treated, whether it's, you know, chest pain to the emergency department or back or leg or any type of extremity pain in our case. And one of the things that, you know, we discuss on our weekly management calls and have in practice at all locations is that once a patient calls or someone calls on their behalf, we will get them seen within 24 to 48 hours at any of our 17 locations. So it's something I think that's important. You know, to your point, Robin, about patients having to wait for weeks and weeks to get seen and get into, you know, Penn or Jefferson. And, you know, these are great institutions. You know, both Len and I worked there in past lives. But getting the patient in to start their treatment, to start their care right. journey is critical. And, you know, it's one of the things that we stand proud of, getting patients in such a timely manner to help turn back the dial on the pain.
Talk about the efficiency also of a surgical center. In other words, I remember being in a hospital recently, and it dawned on me, because I hadn't been there since I was a kid, must have been 5 or 6 different individuals came in and asked me for the same information.
Right.
And I thought, and it suddenly hit me, and I'm like, they're not connected. They're not sharing. You know, they may be different vendors. In a surgery center, you deal with this one staff and you know, the surgeons. That's got to be a big factor.
When we refer to North American Spine and Pain, they get the information from the get-go. And then they don't, you know, unlike a hospital where you are giving it time and time again, a lot of times that, you know, I've been in the hospitals with relatives or whatever, and numerous people come in. I think with hospitals, it's more or less checks and balances, because mm-hmm. it's so crazy in a inner city emergency department that they send multiple people in. And then the nurses ask you the same questions over again. And they ask you what you're allergic to over and over again. And it really is for malpractice and checks and balances. And yes, it does drive the clients or the patients crazy. And but that's how it is, and it's not going to change, because it's, and then you add COVID on top of it, and it's not a good place. But with surgery centers, you're meeting one person, you're giving the information, and then it's almost like a all-inclusive resort, and then you can go and partake.
You know, I like that analogy. It's sort of an integrated care network. You go into the hospital and you've got all these individual departments, yes. Surgery, anesthesiology, internal medicine. Everybody's weighing in, but they're all siloed. Whereas in at NASPAC, at our ASCs, care is more streamlined. Right. It's one integrated health network. All providers are able to communicate directly with each other, with nursing staff, with admin staff. And it's, to your point, Joe, the efficiency is incredible.
So I referred a patient to Dr. Bruno the other day, and she came in with a diagnostic study, but it's not that he was unhappy with the diagnostic study, but he wanted further diagnostic studies, which pretty much streamlined the whole process. So we wrote them, and she'll get them done next week, and then she'll come back. But she's going to come back really quickly, and then you go from there. And that, I mean, you can't get any better than that when it comes to back pain. And I think NASPAC is different than a lot of the other pain groups, because they have a boarded neurosurgeon on staff with a ton of experience.
Talk about, Doc, about 20 years ago, 25 years ago, those, in some senses, antiquated processes compared to, you know, what your day is like now and how it moves forward.
Sure. Well, what has changed over that 20-year period is the process has been speeded by computers and better diagnostic systems and more detailed information available really at the touch of a button, literally. And that is what makes the diagnostic process easier to do and more efficient for the patients. Sometimes gathering that information is difficult from outside facilities. But when we're working with these patients in our office, we have staff who gather that information for us. And as I say, you can get it from the internet by computer. We have it available. It maximizes our efficiency and decreases the amount of time, the latency in trying to make a diagnosis. The patients appreciate that. We do as well. And the ultimate responsibility still is the physicians to decide if the information's appropriate and correct. And we also, when we're dealing with and treating patients, we always are the last people to ask the patient critical questions. Sometimes the patients will say, oh, they already asked me that. But I'm saying, yeah, I know, but I want to know, which side are we doing today? Is it your neck or your back? What's been bothering you? And so we also duplicate question asking.
Yeah.
But it's important
thing.
That we know exactly
that question is important.
Right.
Well, people like to be, Doc, if you would, for our listeners, talk about the range of surgeries that you've done. You know, I mean, you're a neurosurgeon, so there's a wide array there. Talk about that.
The most complex surgeries that I've been involved in over the years would be for removal of either vascular anomalies, abnormal blood vessels, or brain tumors and their location. And so that's the area where we would use the best diagnostic techniques we had. We would use microscopes in the operating room, and we would do detailed dissections and so on. In addition to that, we, over the years, the spine processes and procedures have improved a great deal. The ability to remove discs, correct vertebral fractures, and stabilize patients is twice or three times as good as it was in the 1990s. And so a lot of that gets done nowadays with excellent results. The last on the list would be some of the what we would otherwise consider minor procedures, which would be peripheral nerve decompressions, repair of lacerations, changes in our ability to diagnose and treat those as well because of the advances in technology. But so it would be from craniotomy and brain surgery to spine surgery, and then actually to peripheral or extremity surgery.
You know, just thinking about that, and Doc, Dr. Slevin, as an anesthesiologist, I'm assuming that, you know, it wouldn't be, you know, whenever, anytime Dr. Bruno's in a surgery, you know, doing surgery, there's an anesthesiologist right next to him. How important is that communication and preparation?
Yeah, look, it's critical, Joe, especially, you know, when you're talking about high volume, potential blood loss procedures, you know, or neurologic procedures involving areas of the brain where the patient's ability to respond, react, or otherwise, you know, communicate post-op need to be tracked and monitored so that when the patient's emerging, not only are the hemodynamics stable, blood volume has been, you know, adequately resuscitated, but also the patient can communicate quickly so that there's no concerns about deficits, obviously, following, you know, for example, a craniotomy or any type of decompression procedure in the skull or within the brain.
The preparation, Doc, when you're going to do a surgery of that type. I know a family that goes through something like that, you know, you lead up to, I mean, it's you know, it doesn't take a much of an imagination to understand that it's life and death. How do you prepare for that? Because there's only a few human beings on the planet that are qualified to do that type of stuff.
It's truly analogous to being a manager of a team, reviewing the diagnostic studies, making, if you will, a game plan, deciding ahead of time exactly how you're going to approach the situation, from as simple a question as where to make the incision to what instrumentation you're going to use, and just as important is what anesthesia you need for the patient and for the process. I mean, we certainly worked very closely with anesthesiology because they were a critical part of what we were doing. We would ask them to lower the blood pressure. We would ask them to change the patient's reactivity to help us diagnose what exactly was going on with the patient's reflexes during surgery. I mean, It's a team effort, and so it's pretty much the same as taking an NFL team to a game.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, the Eagles. It might even, Doc. Maybe we could use you at this point.
Maybe we can resuscitate
that. I don't know about that.
That's a good point.
But isn't it interesting that the docs that you depended on the most are now the docs that you're working with now?
Yeah,
because the majority of the docs at NASPAC are boarded anesthesiologists.
Yeah, these guys are sharp, really sharp. And I talk to them all the time about the things that I want to do and if they think it's appropriate and do they have any suggestions about how to do it better. It's critical.
Yeah, because Karen, you came from Penn.
Yeah, yeah. I spent a decade there. I always joke I was released for good behavior. it was a great experience. And you know, to your point, Len, I think the fact that we do have such open communication between all of us at NASPAC, it really, you know, behooves the patient and ensures the best possible outcome. The patient can come, you know, for example, and see me and Len on the same visit at the same location on the same day and leave with a, you know, a well thought out
comprehensive
timely plan, correct, from a interventional pain as well as neurosurgical perspective, that, all at one visit.
That's my plan for my workers' comp patients. I mean, it's a great one stop shop.
Yep.
How important is that, Robin? Also,
it's
because
so important. We had a client yesterday. It took her a while to get to your office, but once she got there and I explained the importance, but we can now transfer her to another office that's closer. But I just, you know, because of, you know, it's so crazy, but in comp, they put parameters on you with time frames that have nothing to do with medicine at all. So I have to get all this stuff in a set amount of time just to make the judges happy. So yes, I had to get her to you at the Willow Grove office, and then she'll be seen at the City Line Avenue office. And yes, it did take like 5 phone calls to explain that to her. But in the end, by the time I explained the types of doctors she was seeing, she was fine. But that is a great thing that they could be seen by a variety of different doctors.
Within 24 hours. I mean, in other words, that's
well,
you
know, the other day I was at the Willow Grove office and Dr. Bruno was in the office, and then there was also a pain doctor on the office. So let's just say somebody came in and they needed to be done right away. I mean, Dr. Bruno could see them and then he could bring them into one of the ORs if they needed to be seen and if it was emergent. You know, these surgery centers they're amazing. Because they are little mini, they're surgical suites, and they can go home.
Well, Robin, what was in a sense to me, and which always been something that is kind of, it was so individuals that go to work to feed their families. You go to work, and we've all seen, you know, we do the labor show, so we do a lot of union workers, and Robin, this show itself get promoted to the union community, and so. It's very relevant to injured workers. And so the point is, individuals that go to work that are so used to, my wife, when she went to your office, she was treated like unbelievable. It was a fantastic experience. Not only that, it saved her life. When you get injured on a job, you automatically expect your doctor to be like Dr. Bruno. You walk in and say, listen, a doc, save me, okay? But that isn't the way it is often because of the system itself, okay? Mm-hmm. People aren't used to that type of situation when they go to somebody and they don't get the same experience. They definitely don't get to see individuals like Dr. Slevin and Dr. Bruno, particularly right away.
Well, I mean, I hate to say it, but there's like a totem pole when it comes to...
Well, it's a system. It's your insurance company.
The insurance company, if you're listening, Mr. Insurance Company, it's very apparent that you're doing everything you can to prevent the clients from getting well.
Or making it easy for them to get well. That's for darn sure.
So just the other day, the client set up to get surgery. And the surgery's on this Wednesday. The COVID test was Monday. They wanted the client in work. And I'm like, no, you have to go home and self-isolate. Because if you catch COVID in between Monday and Wednesday, your surgery will be put off for a month, if not longer.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to fire me. No, they're not going to fire you. You need to go home and self-isolate. But
I have spoken to the insurance companies. Actually, I don't know if I should mention the name, but I think it was Travelers. I was talking to these people years ago when I was working solely as a neurosurgeon. And I said to them, why don't we assume that the patient actually is injured?
Yeah.
instead of assuming that the patient's trying to get over on the insurance company, I said, let's start with that assumption. I will tell the patient that the treatment is going to make them better in a certain amount of time. And if they return to work at the end of that period, you're going to pay them 1.5 times what they're making now for the first year that they return to work. I said, I think in the long run, you're going to save a lot of money.
It's a great point you make, Doc. I can tell you, like, the common sense. How about this? Treat people like that.
I know, like, but it like, doesn't. Like, it doesn't.
Like give them the benefit of the doubt that they're injured, for crying out.
The person comes in and says, I'm injured. Say, okay.
How about,
let's see if we can make this better.
Why not send them to doctors like yourselves? So next thing you know, you actually diagnose it. You're a Penn doctor. You're a Princeton doctor. I think we can all agree that you're gonna know if somebody's trying to pull a fast one. Once we establish the injury, we treat them, and then next thing you know, you don't have 10 lawyers calling you the next day going, we know you're trying to screw our patient over, and he can't walk or bend over or touch his toes. But that just must be actuaries, Doc, sitting there going, we can get more money if we just bust their, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the reality is that the majority, the vast, vast majority of injured workers want to get better. They want to go back to work. They want to start, you know, feeding their families again. They want to spend time with their kids, their grandkids. They want to go to the game. That's what they want to do. They are not interested in trying to, you know, quote unquote, game the system. There is no game in the system. They want to get back to work. And that's why we're here, to help them get back to work as quickly as possible, with the lowest amount of costs to the healthcare system. I mean, what we do and how we do it and the surgical center model and avoiding the hospital cuts costs, so that the reality is it actually costs the insurance company less to get the client, the patient back to work in a expedited, fast-track manner than they would ordinarily if they were going elsewhere, having fragmented care, going one place for, you know, chiropractic treatment, going somewhere else for imaging, going somewhere else for pain. You know, that's where clients and patients get lost to follow up, and they just sink into this hole of, you know, unending red tape.
Robert, you mentioned one-stop shop. That's what you mean by that, right? In other words, somebody doesn't have to make an appointment to then go see Dr. Bruno. He's in the same organization.
Well, that's what sets North American Spine and Pain apart, is that they have so many different providers under one entity. And for instance, one of their pain doctors could say, you know what, I want you to see my colleague, Dr. Bruno, because I just want to get his take. It's either, you know, going to another room, or it's just going to a different facility, but it's within the confines of NASPAC.
And many times now we do it electronically using Zoom, telehealth visits.
Yeah, that works
that's
great.
That allows us to, you know, interchange ideas and have visits with patients even remotely the following day, even if they're at a distant location.
Yeah.
So for example, this morning I was seeing patients in the Pittsburgh area because of the fact that we'll be back in the office physically next week. So ahead of that visit, we can organize lab studies, radiology imaging, get in their office notes, pulling all the discs, et cetera, so that when we review the patient in person, we can really hit the ground running. And that's just one example of how it's done throughout NASPAC, that patients really don't have to wait, no matter where they are.
I know. And you know what I tell clients all the time, patients? I'm like, nothing against radiologists, but I'm going to have that. Just bring your disc. And they're like, okay, and what's so important about the disc? Because I want the neurosurgeon or the pain doctor to read it. I'm like, they're looking at it from different eyes, and it's a whole different perspective. It's great that the radiologist wrote that there's nothing wrong with you, but like 10 days later, you're still in like a fair amount of pain. So something's up with what's going on. We either need a different diagnostic study, or the neurologist sees something, or the neurosurgeon sees something that the radiologist didn't.
Well, yeah, the radiologists are clearly highly trained experts in the area. They do analyze the studies in great detail. What they haven't done is examine the patient.
Right.
And they don't know what the patient's complaint is, nor how the patient's responding to treatment. So the reason that I always emphasize with the patient that I need the disc, the CD from the study, and I say, the radiologist is going to give us a report which will be accurate. However, for me to decide how to treat you better, I need to actually look at the study, because what I'm looking for is going to be a little different than what the radiologist is.
When you say the study, you're talking about the actual X-ray?
The MRI, yeah. CAT scan.
What's amazing about that is this. How often you hear the exact opposite. The doctor only wants to read it. You can't get them to look at it. I've had injured workers say to me, I can't get anybody to look.
Well, that's at Concentra or at... Yeah. At these defense-oriented facilities where they don't have a real neurosurgeon. They have a primary care doctor who doesn't know how to read an MRI study. And that's for a lot of these unions that have panels and even the police and fire that have panels, do you know that they have beautiful providers on these panels, but they still send them to Concentra? And that really annoys the hell out of me because they should be able to see whoever they want on this panel. But... Anyway, yes, and there should be some sort of way, you'd think in 2021, almost 2022, where we could be integrated through HIPAA somehow, that you could get that CD emailed to you.
Well,
the
they won't mail it. The restriction really is.
I know,
the HIPAA
but
law.
They should be able to send you pictures.
Yeah, I tell the patients that also. I say you have to bring it to me because HIPAA restricts that from being sent out.
But they should be able to, once they get to your front desk, they should be able to sign something, and then you should be able to. It's so easy. My God, Facebook is more. Except for yesterday, but Facebook is more in tune to this than these big organizations. But if you get something done at Penn at A Street and you see a doctor at 34th Street, I don't know if it's changed, but in the last couple of years, they weren't integrated.
The issue is also when, as a provider, as a doctor, if we're going to inject or operate on a patient, it's our responsibility to actually study, look at the images ourselves, not to rely on a third party.
Right.
I think that's one of the important things. And the second thing is, if you think about what is actually taking place, it's akin to somebody describing what they see when they look at a painting.
Right.
You've got a radiologist who's going to look at their perspective, and then you've got a neurosurgeon, interventional pain specialists that are going to look at it from a slightly different perspective because of slightly different training, and that's okay. But it does require your physician that's going to lay hands on you, inject or operate on you to actually look at the images. And I would say to all the workers and everybody out there, you should really make sure that your provider looks at the images and does not only rely on the report of what somebody else thought about you.
Talk about that. Elaborate a little further, Doc, because it's really, really, really interesting what you're looking at compared to a radiologist who is looking at it, very educated way. But
hold on. I have another thing. Wait a minute. But like in the beginning,
you're going to have to stay longer.
Yeah, you might have to stay longer. But I mean, seriously, you would have to, when you first started looking at MRIs and CAT scans, at first it was like Japanese, but then as it got going, I'm like, we depend on the neurosurgeons to read those scans.
Well, I was training in neurosurgery at Penn when we got our first CAT scan machine. So I've been looking at them for a long time.
Right.
The thing about it is when you look at the image, you have an idea of what it is that you're actually looking for. When I look at an image of somebody that has pain in a certain location, I know which root level I want to look at. I know which foramen I want to see. I'm interested in a very specific part of the study. The radiologist says the patient has, degenerative disease, spondylosis. And so, yeah, that's fine. What about the L3-4 foramen on the left side? Because that's where I think the trouble is. So that's what I'm looking for. It's a big difference in emphasis. And that's what Kieran was saying. They look at it from their point of view. I understand that. They're fine. They're accurate. I need to look at what I need to work on.
Right.
And that's a little different and more focused.
And I'd rather a neurosurgeon, if the MRI is not up to good quality, I just rather them write for a new one and I'll get it done, and I'll explain to the attorney why I need a second MRI, and they will have to explain it to the insurance company. Because a lot of times these people get, 9 out of 10 times these people get, they come from the injury after being seen at the ER, being seen at Concentra or the other one, I can't remember the name, with nothing.
Right.
Nothing. And then it's my job to get them in to see somebody within 30 days. and get everything I need so that we can file a petition and blah, 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 blah. It's not brain surgery, but it's a little daunting.
It's ironic that we can actually say that we have a brain surgeon
Isn't it though? Exactly.
When we work a brain surgeon, he does. No, I think it's just absolutely incredible. We're going to take a short break, as short a break as we possibly can, and we'll have more from the Who's Who in Philly Labor Show after the break.
Suffering a work injury or any type of personal injury can be a painful and traumatic experience. What can make it even more difficult for a patient is trying to navigate and find the quality medical care they need for their particular injury. Healthmark Enterprises is a full-service medical coordination and marketing company started in 1994 by CEO Robin Lewison that takes all the worry and complications out of treatment for a work or personal injury. From coordinating full-service medical treatment with a top medical professionals, providers, and specialists to overseeing patient compliance and providing one-on-one personalized communications with clients. Healthmark Enterprises handles the entire treatment process for injured workers and those suffering personal injuries so they can just concentrate on getting better. Healthmark Enterprises believes that being injured should not limit one's access to great medical care. Now, more than ever, an injured person needs an advocate on their side. Contact Healthmark Enterprises at 215-563-1315. That's 215-563-1315. Healthmark Enterprises. Pinnacle Medical Plus is a full-service urine toxicology and durable medical equipment company serving patients throughout the continental United States. With over 25 years of industry experience, the professionals at Pinnacle Medical Plus provide high-quality services and products combined with excellent service at a reasonable price. On the urine toxicology side, Pinnacle is a trusted partner that provides the most up-to-date therapeutic drug monitoring technology. On the DME side, Pinnacle offers an extensive list of premium products along with priority delivery services. At Pinnacle Medical Plus, their number one goal is making sure their customers and patients receive the quality care and services they deserve. Contact Pinnacle Medical Plus for all of your urine toxicology and durable medical equipment needs at 888-396-8644 or online at www.pinnaclemedicalplus.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Who's Who in Philly Labor Show. We're sponsored by Robin Lewison, Healthmark Enterprises. We've got a phenomenal show. Dr. Kieran Slevin and Dr. Leonard Bruno of North American Spine and Pain are Robin's guests, and phenomenal broadcast. I'll tell you, Dr. Bruno, during the break, you mentioned, in a sense, you know, the communications with the patient and positive reinforcements and things like that. That makes such a difference. Talk about that.
Well, I think that's a critical part of the relationship between me and my patients. And early on in interviewing them and examining them, I reassure them that I am going to help them, that I'm going to be with them, that this is not a situation in which I'm going to abandon them or not give them the best advice that I can and so on. Once that's established, they tend to relax more and feel comfortable with asking me questions about what the treatment's supposed to achieve and how long it'll take and those sorts of things. Again, from having been involved with patients like this for 40 years, I have a pretty good idea of what the time span would be for recovery from various injuries. And I can explain that to them. And then when they come back for follow-up visits, if they're following what I think is the proper timeline, I mean, if they're saying, yeah, you know, the pain's down to a 7 or this is better, I feel stronger here, I many, many times will say to them, wow, I'm really proud of you. You're doing great. And what surprised me with that is how the patients will turn to me and say, nobody ever said that to me. Nobody ever said they were proud of me. I said, well, you're doing great. You're taking control of this. You're making progress. You're making a great recovery. I think we're right on schedule. And their response to that is gratifying, very gratifying.
The empathy factor in working with injured people is probably like minus five. And seriously, I mean, we see it every day. That's why I really wanted to start to use pain groups as part of my process in how I treated these injured workers, because they just, you know, when you just go from the diagnostic study sometimes to right into, you know, seeing a surgeon, if the surgeon is not empathetic with these injured workers who A, don't have any money, B, this is, and the worst part is when they, this is their first go around with an injury. They get very disgruntled, they get angry, some get depressed. It's a whole gamut of things. So having a doctor believe in the patient and be empathetic is everything.
That's so true, Robin. And look, no injured worker asks to be injured on the job. As we age, degenerative changes occur, wear and tear. We expect those, right? Right. But nobody asks to be injured on the job. So to then run into roadblocks, right, have minefields and pitfalls.
Like you did something wrong.
Correct. And it's almost, there's a sort of a, you know, you're viewed through a lens that you're not legitimate because you're injured on the job.
Right.
And that is really appalling. You know, the ability for us to lens point, to be real people, to show empathy to the patient is only, you know, backed up by the fact that we do just that, right? It's a physical exam. It's eye-to-eye contact.
Right.
We work with medical scribes, so we're not sitting behind a laptop for the visit. We have somebody in the room that documents the exam findings that we dictate thoroughly so that the documentation is tight. Tight documentation ensures a better outcome for the patient. But at the same time, we're able to have eye contact with the patient, to perform a physical exam, to lay hands on the patient, to actually get to the root of the problem, as well as coming up and formulating a plan to treat and get them back to work. That's what makes North American Spine so different to
so
other
different
groups.
Yesterday I was on the phone with a mother, and the injured worker was a 22-year-old son, boy. And he decided to take a year off from college, and he got a job, and he got really injured. And she said, you know, he was a soccer player, he was this, they came from upstate PA. But anyway, she took him to the ortho that treated all of his soccer injuries. And they basically didn't want to see him. And she's like, what do you mean? You've seen him his whole life since he's 12.
Wow.
And then they said, no, we don't treat injured workers.
It's a different ball game.
Yeah. So I had to bring him to Philly.
You know, when you're treating an individual, there's a lot of different, we've talked about this before, in when it comes to pain, and a lot of the, you know, Doc, you've been doing it for 40 years. Recovery is a big part of the perspective, what type of procedures you have access to at this point, compared to before, you know, a long time ago when there were no minimally invasive procedures. How much does that factor into the recovery, factor into what the game plan is overall?
Oh no, that's the ultimate goal, right? And although the degree of injury can predict outcome to a certain extent, it's not totally accurate, and it's important to discuss with the patient and have available all the techniques that we do. And things are, as you say, very different from the way they were 20 years ago. And the outcomes are much better. So that I reassure the patients about that when I'm talking to them. I say, I have a few tricks up my sleeve and that sort of thing, so that they understand what I'm getting at. But it is really gratifying to me to see them respond so well. I mean, I'm surprised at how well they do with the treatments that we offer them.
Do you ever shake your head and go, wow, 35 years ago, this would have took a major, at some of the new techniques and equipment that are coming out that you have access to?
Yeah, it's a different ballgame.
Yeah.
I still have a pretty good idea of about outcome and the timing on outcome, but the techniques to get there are radically different and much, much better.
What about education? continuing education. If you, is that, I mean, I'm assuming in your area, something new is coming out, you know, all the time.
Yeah, well, that's the continuing medical education. We'll go to national conferences, go to actually clinics and do some of the procedures on models and that sort of thing, so
wow.
that we can stay abreast of the developments, because they're pretty rapidly turning out nowadays, and they're good. They're really great techniques.
I'm sorry.
The biggest thing, the one of the biggest problems we have with insurance companies is recovery time. Like everybody's different, and it's different, because the Blue Cross Blue Shield person, if the Blue Cross Blue Shield person took, let's say, 6 months to get well, and the workers' comp patient takes 6 months, they have a problem with that. And that's a constant battle. Like everybody's recovery time is different. Everybody's socioeconomic conditions are different.
Would you assume that that's because they're paying compensation along with medical?
They don't always pay, and every comp case is different. But the great thing about a surgery center is that it's privately owned, and it's not owned by a conglomerate like a hospital. So we are able to get a lot of things done. And a lot of times once we get surgery, and these procedures that NASPAC is doing are considered surgery. But once we get a surgical procedure done, it pretty much it goes in front of a judge, and we have attorneys like to say once surgery is done, we win the case. But still, it takes, especially with COVID now, and the insurance companies are saying with the lack of personnel, which I don't believe because they're all working from home. Mm-hmm. We're still having a hard time getting clients paid, doctors paid, everybody paid.
A couple of thoughts on recovery time from procedures there. You know, as you're speaking there, Len and Robin, it just occurred to me there's recovery time from your injury, mm-hmm. which we expedite and we decrease by virtue of the fact that we get the patient in ASAP and
right.
have this integrated model with everybody talking to everybody that is going to treat the patient to get them where they need to be to
Huge.
Get back to work. So that is number one. Then recovery time from individual procedures has also, to your point, Joe, about new and emerging technologies. Len and I talk about this all the time. Newer and invasive, minimally invasive, far less invasive procedures than even, you know, 10, 15, you know, 5 years ago are now available that we will do. And one example is a percutaneous microdiscectomy, going into the disc, decompressing the disc through an incision of no more than a quarter to an eighth of an inch. The patient is in and out, same day, minimal blood loss, no bone removed, no scar tissue at the level of the nerve root. And the tissue has been removed, the offending tissue that was pushing on the nerve root. So there's and that's one example. There are a lot of situations like that where the patient can really be, you know, have the recovery time from the procedure expedited, made quicker, as well as their recovery time from the injury. And I think that's what we do, you know, extremely well.
And also with recovery, there are concerns as well. In other words, with the rigorous recovery, dealing with, you know, narcotics on a heavily taken narcotics at a long-term basis, there are other risks involved. These procedures that you're able to do right now, because you're not just juggling, you're not only dealing with the surgery, but the recovery afterwards and the rehabilitation and the medication have to factor in.
Well, the fact that we can get the patients in so fast is a testament to the fact that there's less narcotic use.
Correct. And, you know, look, opioids and narcotics have their, you know, window of utility.
You're not taking CB oil if you just got done brain surgery.
Correct. You're not going to take an aspirin if somebody's, you know, operating on your back.
No.
That's right.
However, we monitor patients closely ahead of, during, and even after their treatment with the opioids. And we also have an on-staff psychiatrist with a expertise in the treatment of addiction at NASPAC, who helps us mitigate, decrease the, you know, potential population of patients from going into that road of addiction, because it's real. And when patients are exposed to medications, that there is that potential for abuse, misuse, and diversion. We track that rigorously, and we have help in terms of on-staff psychiatry for not only for obviating addiction, but as importantly, identifying and treating anxiety and depression that go with chronic pain.
And also, they help with the stimulators.
Correct. So it allows us for neuromodulation for the stimulator devices to get that approval done in a seamless manner, because we can that can now be done in-house under the NASPAC umbrella.
Doc, talk about when you know you have somebody who's maybe going to have a chronic pain issue their whole life. Maybe they have they've had a catastrophic injury, and you sense that there could be some. How do you manage that type of situation? I know you handle you're handling the surgery and all that, but you also have, like you said, you have an idea about the rehabilitation. What are your goals in that situation to minimize the potential of addiction, or and maximize the success and still try to eliminate pain as much as possible?
That's a situation that requires detailed explanation to the patient about what I know is likely to be the outcome from this injury, using terminology that the patient can understand. So I will sometimes talk about nerve damage and describe it as a frayed wire, or this is just like a lamp cord that has a few of the little strands inside broken, and they're not going to heal. So this particular abnormality is not going to get better. Then the question is, how do we keep you from having ongoing symptoms that inhibit your ability to enjoy your life? And that's what we're going to do. And this is how we're going to do it. So I go through those things with them in detail. I explain to them how they should use their medications, including the opiates, to avoid addiction so that I can keep them comfortable and enjoying life, but not allow them to go down the addiction trail,
sure,
which is endless and very difficult to stop when it's at the end point, or to bring back from the
end point. It can happen fast, too.
It does happen relatively fast. So those are the our responsibilities. That's what we do for them. That makes it a pain control practice, because we don't tell them. I mean, in a situation like that, I will specifically say to the patient, I'm not going to be able to get you to zero.
Right.
It's not going to be the way it was before. However, I'm going to be able to get you to a point where you're able to enjoy your family, enjoy your life.
And manage it.
And manage the pain, and I'm going to help you do that. So I think it's important to team up with the patient and make them understand that I'm going to be available to them for the future, so that we can maintain this regimen and keep them comfortable. One of the things nowadays that helps a great deal, too, is the Pennsylvania Medical Marijuana Program.
Oh, yeah.
What happens with that many times is I'll have a patient who's taking what I think is an excessive amount of opiate, and I'll say, we should try you on the medical marijuana program. Here's what I want you to do with that. Here's what we're going to do with your opiates. These patients, almost to a person, come back a month later, and I say, how are you doing? And they say, I'm okay. I say, well, last month you were taking 5 pills a day. And they say, well, I'm taking 2. I said,
That's a win.
Victory. We're where we want to be. Mm-hmm. We can manage this lifetime if you want to. So
that's great.
It's that kind of thing.
Dr. Slevin.
Just to follow up on that, Joe, on what Len said, I couldn't agree more. The improvement that we see and the decrease in opioid use is dramatic with the use of MMP, Medical Marijuana Program. And at NASPAC, we will certify patients appropriate diagnoses in New Jersey, PA, and Delaware, as well as providing them with access to a consultant who can help guide them, because it can be an overwhelming experience going to the dispensary. So
it's daunting.
We have on staff consultants that can guide the patient through for, right strain for right diagnosis, so they hit the ground running.
Listen, we got about 2 minutes left. First of all, it's been a total honor to have Dr. Bruno on the broadcast.
Thank you.
It's been phenomenal.
My pleasure.
Always an honor to have Dr. Slevin. And,
of course,
Robin Lewison makes it all happen. So otherwise, we'd be out having a beer somewhere, guys.
They might like that.
But having said that, it's been a phenomenal broadcast, Robin. I mean, this is one for the books.
This is really good medicine, and this is what I try to do and I bring to the table with my injured workers. It would really be bad if I couldn't have these kinds of
doctors. Well, your motto has always been, just because you're injured doesn't mean you can't have excellent medical care, and this is a great example of that. Contact information at North American Spine and Pain.
So email is info@naspacmd.com, website www.naspacmd.com, and the call center is 1-855-862-7767.
Dr. Bruno, I want to thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
It's been a great experience, and Dr. Slevin, phenomenal.
Thank you, Joe.
As usual.
Great to be back.
Robin Lewison, thank you so much for making it happen.
You're welcome.
And I want to thank our listeners for tuning into the Who's Who in Philly Labor Show. On WWDB 860M, I want to thank our producer Dan in the other room. I got your name. I got it right there, brother. And I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in. For everybody on the panel, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening.